You're listening to 99.1 WIUX Pearson Radio, and this is the WIUX News Hour. This is Andrew Blank, and I'm here with Benjamin Motz, a professor here at IU's Psychology Department. For starters, what classes do you teach?
So I teach P335, which is cognitive psychology. That's the big fun one. I also teach P211. I'm the lead instructor for that, so that's a huge course where we teach research methods, and little labs are taught by lab instructors. And right now I'm also teaching intro to psych for honors, so that's P106 for Hutton Honors students.
Awesome. We're here today to mainly talk about how people perceive abstract concepts, more specifically time. And I guess first, a little bit of background. So why are concepts important and why do we study them?
Yeah, so concepts are important stuff because they allow us to understand things about things that are presented to us that we might not otherwise know that much about. So let's say that I see somebody in a dark alley and he's pointing something metallic at me, kind of like you are right now. And I don't really see it very well, but I have a concept of how guns work and how tasers work or all this stuff. And I can kind of infer, based on what I know about that concept, that whatever he's pointing at me probably isn't that safe and that I might want to get away. So by having an idea of how guns work or how chairs work or how kitchen ovens work or something, then I kind of can understand things that I might not have ever seen before. So that's one aspect for which they're important. It's also important to have concepts to be able to communicate efficiently with other people. So if I say to you, hey, you know, there's a lion running at us, it's important for you to know everything about how lions work for you to be able to know that we should probably get away. So lions and tigers or guns or whatever all kind of help us to understand the things around us, and in that way make communication much more efficient also.
Mm-hmm. So what exactly are concepts? So I think of a chair, and how does my brain come up with that mental image? What's going on in there?
Yeah, so you guys have concepts of chairs and desks and all the things around you. And the way that you get those concepts is by experiencing chairs. So every time you've seen a chair or even something like a chair, it's caused neurons to fire in your brain that all kind of share certain things in common each time you see something like a chair. So each chair is different and different neurons might fire, but all the neurons that kind of share the collective properties of a chair kind of become the representation of a chair. So it's in that way that our concepts are fundamentally founded in the experiences that we have with those things. So we call that the perceptual symbol systems approaches to concepts. So basically, you have perceptual symbols, the perceptual symbols that fire every time you see a chair, or every time you see an oven or a gun or whatever, and those become your representation.
So we understand how concrete concepts operate or how we mentally represent them, but how do we understand abstract concepts? These are ideas that we don't directly, perceive.
Exactly. It's a big problem. So, like I just told you, things like chairs or ovens or something are easy because every time we see or experience them, there's a certain group of neurons that might fire as we experience them. But we don't have a direct way of experiencing abstract concepts like time. So, for instance, time, we don't have the ability to touch or to taste or to feel or to see. But yet we can think about time, and we can do calculations on time, and we can say that's 2 days from this day and all this. So how do we think about them? And what we've learned is that people use concepts that they have direct, concrete experiences in and apply those concepts to the concepts that are abstract. So, for instance, you might talk about time as money. So money is something you can experience and touch and smell, and you have a good, concrete concept of money. Sometimes we can use that concept to describe time. So I could say, I'm saving time, or I don't know if I have enough time for you, as if it's this monetary resource. And time obviously isn't a monetary resource, but yet we can use our understanding of something much more concrete to be able to inform our concept of time, making us able to communicate about time and understand concepts about time.
This kind of leads into your research, where you don't necessarily focused on time as money, but time as space.
Exactly. So that's the other big mapping of a concrete concept onto this abstract concept of time. So the probably the one that we use more often is the conception of time in terms of space. So I'll say that meetings are far away in the future or something, and that's a spatial description, but yet we can think about times as being far apart from one another in the same way. Or that, I've got all these things that are kind of close together in time, And that's obviously, again, a spatial description, but we think about it in terms of time.
People can be primed to think about time and space in two different ways.
Exactly. So it turns out that there's two different ways that people think about time in terms of space. And I can demonstrate that pretty easily to you with a question. So let's imagine this scenario that there's a meeting on next Wednesday. And let's imagine that that meeting is going to be moved forward 2 days. So what day is this meeting now going to take place on? And what do you say, Andrew?
I actually said Monday.
You said Monday?
I thought of, I was fixed, I guess, in time, and the events were moving towards me. So if you move something forward towards me, think of it being moved closer and closer to me.
Precisely, and there's about half of the people out there would probably have said, yeah, if you move the Wednesday meeting forward 2 days, that it would be moved to Monday. But there's probably people out there who maybe are driving or who are walking who would have said Friday. And if you said Friday, you would have been thinking about it in exactly the opposite way that Andrew was thinking about it. So you would be thinking about yourself as moving through time. And if you're thinking about yourself as moving and time events are stationary, then forward is the direction of your motion into the future. So you would have thought that the meeting was moved forward 2 days until Friday. So the cool thing about this mapping and the difference between those two different mappings is that we can change people's conceptions of time by giving them source domain primes. So the source domain is space, and the target domain is time. And if I can just change the way that you're thinking about space, it'll actually change the way that you think about the answer to that question. Next Wednesday's meeting's been moved forward 2 days. What day will it take place? And the way that I get people to change their conceptions is by changing the way that they think about objects moving toward them or themselves moving through events in time. Or, I'm sorry, events in space. So, yeah, so it's pretty cool that way, in that you can prime somebody's experience in something very concrete like space and see changes in how they think about time. And the neat thing there is it demonstrates that people really are thinking about time in terms of space. It's not just that we use the language about time, so not just that we say, you know, events are close together, but we actually are thinking about events as being close together in spatial terms, even though it's in time.
Mm-hmm. So how do you prime these people to think about time as coming towards them, or you're going towards events up in the future?
What a good question. So yeah, so I could either actually have you moving, so I could say, okay, let's take a walk. And if you do that, then you are really thinking about events in time as, you know, as yourself moving through these events in time. But I don't just need to have you moving. I could just have you think about yourself moving. So that's ways to prime people to say Friday, if you get people either moving or thinking about themselves moving. I think the classic example is people who are standing in line in a lunch line tend to think that next Wednesday's meeting's been moved forward to Friday because they're so aware of themselves as moving. But if I wanted you to think about next Wednesday's meeting as being moved to Monday, then all I'd really need to do is have you stand still and think about objects moving around in front of you. And that's a pretty cool thing, too, because I don't need to have objects moving around in front of you or have you actually standing still. If I just get you to think in that mode, then you'll be more likely to think about events on Wednesday as moving forward to Monday. And that's what we did. So we did something as simple as just having people look at a screen, and there were blocks moving across the screen, and, you know, there were this ball that moved from one block to another. And this is very disembodied. It's not necessarily something that you're actually doing. You're just thinking about these blocks as moving around a screen. And that still caused people to think that next Wednesday's meeting is moved forward to Monday. So just the awareness of objects moving around causes you to think about events in time as moving around, and thus forward is to the present. So there's this other cool thing too that my advisor when I was in grad school was studying, and now I think that it'd probably be a cool thing for your listeners. So there's a few languages in the world where people don't describe time as coming toward them. Instead, they think of time as going away from them, but not in front of them, instead behind them. So the funny thing about these people is that if they were talking about events as events in the future, they would say way back in the future, as opposed to being way forward in the future. So there are different languages like Wolof, but the interesting language in this case is the language Aymara. So this is a language that's spoken in the Chilean highlands in the Andes. And again, people actually do talk about events in the future as if they're behind them. And one of the big questions was, well, is this just, you know, the language that they use, or are they actually thinking about events in time that are in the future as being further back behind them. So Rafael Nunez went up into the highlands and actually videotaped people talking about time and observed their gestures when they were talking about time. So when they talked about something that was in the past, they would actually gesture in front of them. And if they talked about something that's in the future, they would gesture behind them, just kind of waving their hands to the back or something, which was remarkable because it meant that there are all sorts of different mappings of how people can place the domain of space into the domain of time. And yeah, it's not just limited to the ones that we're associating with.
Yeah. It's like their back is actually towards the future, and they're seeing, I guess, what's happened in front of them.
Exactly.
I guess they're perceiving it that way.
Precisely, and if you ask them, that's exactly what they would say. So somebody in the Amara would say, I know what happened in the past, so that's what's in front of me, that's what I can see, and I don't know what's happening in the future, so that's why it's behind me and unobservable in a way. So there is a logic behind it, mm-hmm. Yeah. That'll do it, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Professor Motes. And I'm going to send it back to Thomas Asari. You're listening to 99.1 WIUX.
Thank you, Andrew. Good questions.